Perfect. All right, thanks, guys. So continuing what we're discussing. So we'll be focusing on Apache Calcite, which basically does a lot of boilerplate work for you. So if you're writing your own streaming engine or maybe a relational database, you don't need to do a lot of things that have already been done. So I'll go over some of the features that Calcite has and how they've actually been used in different streaming engines. I'll give you some examples of some recent integrations that were done, specifically for Apache Calcite, Apache Apex, Apache Flink. And then we can just make an interactive discussion. So about me, I'll not spend much time here. So I'm active on a lot of different open source projects, and my background basically is from streaming and large data analytics. So I wrote the Rollup Cube aggregation engines for Postgres and the Swimlane data model for Apache Hawk. Apex, I've not been contributing much, but I've been a part of their SQL discussions. And yeah, so that should start. Cool. So let's just take it slow and see why do we care about streams. So streams are a relatively new concept. You can actually understand that from the fact that they're not standardized. So the ANSI SQL doesn't really talk about streams much. Maybe a little, but not to the extent anybody implementing it want to. So what is it, all the noise about streams and everybody's talking about real time, real data. So now, the reason why everybody is going gaga about this thing is because today we have a lot of data inputs. 30 years back, the data input sources were in our control. We knew exactly the form of data that would come in, the sources, the frequency, the type, blah, blah, blah. But today, thanks to all the different sensors and Internet of Things and all these signals, like, for example, I used to work in Amazon's ad serving division. And so we had a lot of user inputs there, click streams and browsing patterns and viewing patterns, stuff like that. So that all really factors in into your daily analytics. So now, today, if your analytics or reports are based on data that's like 3 days old, nobody cares about them. So if you show up a graph on a board and say, this is derived on data that was 4 days old or even 48 hours old, people wouldn't really care. What they care about is how real time are your reports, how real time is your data, and then when you say, okay, this is near real time and these are being generated continuously, then people actually start paying attention to you. So now, one thing to, this is the basis of everything that we're talking about today. The thing is, streams are a very different concept. They're an infinite source of data, and they come in various sizes, shapes, forms, and there's no fixed frequency as to the input of data. But relational tables are, traditionally structured. They have a very fixed schema, they have a very fixed source type. So how do you actually map these two? If you want to do SQL on top of streams, you need to have a way to map that back to a relational table or even a pseudo relational table. So that's where this concept comes in. The stream database duality basically says that, it's a very intuitive concept. We just formalize the statements, but it just says that databases can just be seen as a cache of a stream, assuming the stream is infinite. If you just cache the stream for a while and you just say that, okay, that's a table. And other way around, streams can be said to map the change of data, or the delta of data in a table over a period of time. So if we start viewing streams and tables in this form, then some SQL can be applied to each of them, as we will see now. Okay, so what does the duality actually imply? Okay, so as I said, the first thing is that if we can actually use the duality to create a pseudo table, a pseudo relational table on which to apply SQL, then SQL can also be applied on streams. That's the first basic principle that is applied or that is used to create SQL on top of streams. When this happens, you don't really need any special cases. You don't need custom code or not that much of custom code for your relational tables and for your streams. It's not that you have to run two different PLSQL procedures for each of them and generate two different reports and merge them in. That is not required, because now you are basically emulating both the scenarios into one and using the same infrastructure. Okay, Now coming to why do you care about SQL? This is actually a no-brainer, but I'll just go over it. So SQL's been there for a long time. You know, it's probably one of the most stable languages we've had, stable declarative languages. And one of the best things about SQL is that it's declarative. You really don't need to tell how to execute things. Just leave that to the query optimizer of your engine. You just tell it what to do. It's mathematically complete. It's completely based on relational algebra, which has been time and tested again and again. We have the ANSI standard, which defines what needs to be there for a relational database to be ANSI compliant, which is great. You know, you don't need to worry about non-compliance or non-standard things. And yeah, again, a large majority of database users today are most comfortable or most fluent in SQL. So if you, you know, if your streaming engine supports SQL, then the ramp-up time people will have on your product will be much lesser. They don't need to learn some separate dialect of SQL or some new language altogether. You just tell them, you know, hey, what, I support SQL, and they'll be much more interested in ramping up to your product. Okay, so these are the kind of data workloads that traditionally SQL has supported. You won't see streams here because that's what we're discussing today, but these are the traditional workloads, you know, what SQL has widely been used to process or integrate with. Okay, so this is a very, very brief overview of what Calcite does. You know, Calcite was not really built to do streaming. It was started around 25 years back as a project called Farago. It basically meant that when you're writing your own relational database, you don't need to care about a lot of things. So it provides you two optimizers, which are called HEP and Volcano. HEP is the heuristic planner. Volcano is the new Volcano model. You have rule-based optimization, so you can define a bunch of rules for your query optimizer, define the cost, define the preconditions, and define the input-output transformation. You're done. The engine will just fire them off whenever it sees the condition. And you have SQL parser, validator, you have a bunch of things that are already there. You know, they come out of the box, you just import them as a dependency in your system, you're good to go. Okay. So now let's start looking a bit at streams. You know, how do streams differ from regular SQL or the regular queries you have? So these are two queries that are mentioned here. You know, you can see the very simple queries. By the way, the ANSI SQL now defines stream as a keyword. So if you look it up in the T-SQL section, that's extended SQL, you'll find this keyword. Stream basically says that, okay, anything defined with stream means that you convert a relation to a stream and, you know, basically it's a snapshot. Okay, this is the stream, take up the data for this much window and do this query. So ideally, this query is infinite. As I mentioned below, a normal query like this will be infinite, because assuming that the stream is infinite. You know, it'll just keep the polling of the results at whatever duration it gets. So like this is normal select star over a filter. So for every tuple that I see, when I'm the engine, I see this query, I see that, okay, an input tuple is here. Does it match my filter? Yes, I immediately output it and then discard it. And no, I discard it anyways. So this is an infinite query. And that is not. That is a regular SQL query. So the core principle to understand here is that between a normal query and a stream query, a normal query gets the data from the starting of time, that is just when the table was created, till the current moment, right? So to get a bit into database internals, when you do a select query, you ideally get a read lock on the table, do a snapshot, and then the snapshot basically gives you a point in time look at the data. And you turn that back, you apply the filter. So that's what a normal query does. So, but in for stream queries, your data has just started right now. You say, okay, when you fire this query is when the data input starts for your query. So from now till infinity, this query will run, right? So whatever records have passed till this point, you'll not see them in your result. You'll not see them in your output set. But your output set starts right now. So it's from now to infinity versus normal queries, which are minus infinity to now. Hope that makes sense. Cool. All right. So now that is the core problem between, when we port queries or SQL commands between normal queries and stream queries, that is the main difference. Because the time windows in which they operate are completely different and exclusive, right? So now, how do we solve that problem? That problem is partially solved by this stream table duality. So, as I said, the stream keyword that is defined in SQL, and Galsite supports it, is basically you tell the engine whether to treat the data source as stream or not. The good news here is that using the stream table duality, you can treat a stream both as a table and a stream inside your query as well. So, you know, you might decide to, for the same stream, for the same data source, you can fire one query which treats it as a normal relational table, in which case it'll you have to define a window, like say 30 seconds. It'll cache the data for the next 30 seconds, create a pseudo table, like a view, a materialized view, and then just fire off your query. Or you can say, okay, treat this relation. Now this is something to, this is something very interesting. You can say that for a normal SQL relation, treat this as a stream. So there's an operator which does that. We'll discuss that going ahead. But you can basically say that. So what that translates into is that you say, okay, you know, for this table, I say, okay, this is a static or a non-stream relational table. Treat this as stream and then do this operation. So in that case, the engine will get all the inserts that were done on that table, right? And then it will start pulling those inserts as a stream of inserts. Right? For example, if I did 5 inserts on a table and that table has 5 records, and then I say, okay, select stream, let's get a table called foo, so select stream foo from whatever, right? So to get the inserts from foo and then give them one by one to my executor. The executor just sees a stream of inserts. It does not know whether it came from a physical table or an actual stream. But the executor just sees a stream of inserts, like a normal regular stream that you have. Imagine normal regular stream of data, right? That will be a bunch of inserts and deletes and whatever. But it's not going to be deletes, it will be inserts. So that can be used here as well. Okay. So now this is a very interesting query. Based on whatever we have discussed till now, the duality and, you know, the principle of a table existing both as a stream and a table, this query basically has both a stream, you know, a stream star is basically an infinite stream, and a static table. See, for this subquery, you know, this is just a normal static table. You have the stream and you define the stream interval. Right? Interval 1. So this is an infinite stream which has, in the subquery, it has a static table. And this is a perfectly valid query in Galsite or in any database engine that supports streams. So now this basically is what I was talking about. So imagine you were creating a report that required some, you know, some warehouse data as well as real-time streams. So how do you do that? You don't need to create two separate reports. You can use something like this. So you basically said, okay, take that stream, take that static table, you know, and then just do whatever filters you have. This is the interval I want you to do it in. Give me the result. So this is the interval, the window snapshot that you're doing. As I said, for a stream, when you're joining it to a normal table, you need a window, because you need to materialize that much amount of data. That's the window, that's the stream, that's the static table. And you see something interesting as well, that orders, this table, is basically being treated both as a stream and a static table. So you can basically, as I said, using the duality principle, you've used that table both as a stream and a static table inside the same query. Right? So now that table is basically giving you back the current updates, the current results, and this orders is what has been seen at the time when the query was fired. So this is a static snapshot, and that is a real-time data from the same table. Make sense? Fine. Okay. That was relatively easy. I mean, that was a bit intuitive, but these are the harder parts. So selects and table scans are fine. You know, you can directly map them using just that one principle. But this is where it gets a bit hairy. How do you do aggregations? You know, the most difficult things that SQL has implemented is aggregations, and especially time-based aggregation, you know, window aggregates and stuff like that. How do you map them to streams? How do you do a streaming group by? What does streaming group by mean? What does a streaming grouping set mean? Right? What is the group size? Who defines a group size? What is the gap between the amount of data I aggregate and the result output I send? Right? For static table, it's easy, right? Whenever you see a group boundary in a group by, you see a group boundary, you output it. Reset it, another group output, right? How do you do that for a stream? And this is the most core part. We do not have the flexibility or the privilege of rescanning over the data. Once a tuple is seen, unless you're materializing, in that case you're doing a lot of extra work. But in a performant world, once a tuple is seen, you discard it. So then, how do you ensure that that tuple is not needed anymore? How do you ensure that the tuple that discarded just now will not be a part of any future group in, say, let's a streaming group buy, right? How do you ensure that? So that is a principle called monotonicity that we'll discuss going ahead. But these are the main challenges, you know? These are the main challenges that you see for streams. When is the output? What is the output frequency? What is the aggregation frequency? Who decides them? What is the gap between them? Can they be equal? Can they be different? These are the kind of problems that you'll face. So for, you know, this is a principle. There's another principle called repeat principle. I hope this does not sound like a maths class, okay? 2 minute principle and axioms. But this is the principle that is defined to basically, you know, define the behavior of a streaming query. So it's very simple, you know, all that is just jargon. It basically says that if I have a stream of data, I aggregate it over 1 hour and I do a query. Or forget it, I just do a query over this random stream of data. And let's say I had all that data in another table and I do the exact same query on that, you know, materialized data as well. The two outputs or the two results should be exactly the same. That's the replay principle. So if I replay that stream over that last 1 hour and redo that query, I should get the same output. There should be no difference in the output. What that implies here is that the arrival order, the arrival time, processing time, punctuation, punctuations are basically, you know, like commas and comma separate values. These guys should not be a factor in my output. Now they are auxiliary. You want to discard them, you want to override them, whatever you do. That's the implementation's headache. But these should not affect your output. There should be no time-based factor in your output when dealing with streams. That is basically what the replay principle states. So, and that is what defines the objective for stream queries as well. So one good check here is that if you're doing streaming queries anytime and you want to validate them, you know, just define a window for 1 hour and see, materialize the data and just compare your outputs. So the replay principle should ensure that both the outputs are exactly the same. If they're not, then there's something screwed up. Okay. The replay principle is very useful for all the aggregation work that we just discussed. So we'll discuss group by and window aggregates. Primarily group by, actually. Okay. So let's deep dive into what group by semantics actually define. Group by semantics say that you know, there's a one-to-one mapping between a tuple, an input tuple, and an output group. So let's say I have 10 tuples. So each tuple will be associated with only one output group. That's the only semantic group by has. Okay, there are exceptions to this if you use grouping sets, which basically says that one tuple can be part of multiple groups. We're not discussing that here. And that can be done with something like something called hopping windows. But that, I discussed that on Monday, actually. There was a separate talk just on aggregation. But we can discuss it offline, not take it here. Okay. Now, this is how you basically implement group by for streams. So at the core principle, at the core of this entire thing, the group by, is the replay principle. So the first thing that we keep in mind is that the replay principle is still active here. So how do you ensure that this happens? So now two things that need to ensure here are, one, at the end of each group, right, when doing group by, at the end of each group, we output a tuple, right? And second, and more importantly, that once we process an input tuple and make it a part of a group, we never need to see that tuple again. You know, that tuple, that physical tuple or the logical tuple is never needed again. You know, going ahead, we can't say, oh, you know what, we need that tuple in this group now. That's not, that should not be possible. How do you ensure that? Ensure that with monotonicity. Monotonicity is just a fancy term for primary keys. Okay, what are primary keys? Primary keys basically ensure that no two identical, even though, you know, all the data columns are identical, those two tuples are physically not the same. You know, even if you just add a random grid column to your tables, you know, it ensures that two tuples are never the same, right? So if those two tuples are part of different groups or same group, they're not physically the same tuples. Monotonicity says the same thing. It says that two incoming tuples should not be the same. You basically add some sort of identifier, or you just timestamp them, right? or you add some like quasi-modern cities, basically that there's no physical identifier between them, so you add some weird values, you know, you append some time, or you just say, okay, you know, the first value was 2 commas, the second value was 3 commas, or some just separator, some weird thing you do to ensure that a physical tuple is never repeated again. So two tuples are logically different. That's just primary keys for streams. So that ensures that one process tuple, once it's discarded, is never needed again. Because even if we saw the exact data fields again, it'll be physically a different tuple. Make sense? Cool. All right, so now, let me see what this next slide is. Yeah, so before going to the next slide, I'll basically discuss how this is actually implemented now. So using this monotonicity principle, there's something defined known as tumbling windows. Now, I wish I had a marker here, I could actually show you some things. But tumbling windows basically define a concept. You know, I'll just word it out for you, and I'm sure you'll understand. They say that, okay, let's define a time window, say 1 hour, right? At the end of, and you know, let's start right now, let's say it's 1 p.m. right now, I define a window of 1 hour, and I start right away. So at the end of every 1 hour, I'll aggregate the data seen over the last 1 hour, output that value, and reset my counters. So, you know, starting at 1 p.m., I'll aggregate data till 2 p.m., you know, I'll only see the tuples between 1 and 2 p.m. At the end of, when the clock strikes 2, I'll output the aggregated values like a normal group by, and I'll discard all those tuples, or even all those values, I'm already discarding those tuples, I'll discard those values as well. You know, I don't care about data between 1 to 2 p.m. now. Now next, I'll work between 2 to 3. 3, I'll output that data, discard it, 3 to 4, 4 to 5, 5 to 6. So this again a stream query, so it's infinite. So that's basically how you do a group by. Now if you relate that to your relational group by, you've just defined a group, right? In a normal group by, you just say sort the data and, you know, you define group by the changing values, right? That's how you define groups. In this case, you physically forcibly define a group saying that, okay, the data for 1 hour is a part of the group. And because you have monotonicity, you ensure that even the same tuple was repeated in the next slot, it's not the physically same tuple. So it's not needed in the original group that was seen. So for example, if you see the same values from 1 to 2, another the same tuple from 2 to 3, they're two different tuples. So the one will be part of 1 to 2, other will be part of 2 to 3. So now this is highly performant because you're discarding tuples as they come and you're just aggregating values, dumping them out and not storing any state. So this is still stateless. One goal of streaming SQL is that you have to be as stateless as possible so that you're highly performant. And this, the tumbling windows along with monotonicity basically ensures that. You don't keep any tuples in memory, you don't keep any state, but you're still getting the right values because you physically define one aggregation or one group window, right? Okay, so all right, that's one, and then there are, you know, then there are multiple version of these. There's tumbling windows, what we just discussed. T seconds, I mean the total for T seconds. You can actually say T seconds, I mean the total for T 2 seconds. So you can say, okay, for the, you know, for 9 to 12 p.m., I'll output the result at 12, and then 10 to 1 a.m., I'll output result for 1. So that's basically the 2 hours, right? 10 to 12 is part of 2 groups, or 3 groups in this case. That's actually just grouping sets. One tuple, multiple groups. That's a hopping window. Sliding window is just that it's an infinite thing. You say every record, I say I want to aggregate the tuples that were seen for last, you know, in the last 15 seconds. That's it, or next 15 seconds actually, not last 15. Next 15 seconds I want to aggregate it, and that's a sliding window. You basically, the 15 second window is sliding over your data as it processes. Sliding window, and as I said, group by is implemented by a tumbling window. Okay, quickly go over these. So now you have the provision of joining streams to tables, streams to streams, right? We saw this earlier, so you can basically say that, okay, select star, stream star from orders as O, join products as P, and now on product PID. So this orders will be basically a stream. Products will be just a relational table. And how this is internally executed is that the products table will be created into a hash map, just like a hash join. It'll basically be created in a hash map, and as the data comes in for the stream, it'll basically used as a lookup inside the hash table, right? So you basically take a snapshot of the static table, insert that into a hash map, and for each key that comes in for the stream, you just look it up in the hash table. And then decide, you know, this is a match, you basically give an output or not. That's how you join streams and tables. Now, this has a caveat in the sense that if the underlying table is also changing, right? If the table is not static, then you'll have an issue because you have a stream and a pseudo stream, right? In that case, you'll have some issues, and the ideal way of solving them is you should have a way of going back in time for the static table, you know, temporal tables, as we say. CalSci does not have that, so we still struggle with this. Ideal way of doing that is you create a time snapshot of both your streams and the table, and you say, okay, you know, going ahead from this point, I don't really care about any more inserts into my static table. They'll all be done in the next query that I do. For now, I have a snapshot, I'm happy with that. You can do that, well and good, or else this is one cache that you have to be careful about. Joining streams is pretty simple. You basically define a time window, and you know, say, okay, I'll join streams for 1 hour, and then you just materialize data for that 1 hour, define a lock step, join them, and give the output. That's actually pretty intuitive, and it's not very high performance, but still works. Okay, I'll not go into a lot of detail there because this is again pretty hairy, but the good news is that whatever query optimization techniques are applicable for normal relational tables, most of them are applicable to streams as well, thanks to the stream table duality principle. So all of these, you know, everybody has seen them, right? They're all the standard relational operators. Most of them are applicable in the same form to your streams. Some of them are different. I'll go over them. And then you have some additional operators in addition to these guys, for they're just for streams. The basic two operators that you have are delta and chi. Intuitively, you know, delta operator is this. Just converts a relation to a stream. What you need to, you know, always keep in mind when talking about streams and SQL is that everything boils down to the duality principle. I think I've probably said this the 10th time in this talk. But the duality principle is everything that defines a stream and an SQL. So, you know, this delta operator, you can actually find this in the CalSci API docs. Just converts a relation to a stream. That's it. And for example, I've given an example here. Table is a relation. Table scan is a standard table, like a table scan, like a, you know, standard, not an index scan or just a straight scan. That returns a relational, the current contents of the table. Then the delta operator will basically return all the inserts into the table. If you remember, we were seeing a SQL query where we did the exact same thing. We had a normal relational table and we had a stream table. So that the delta operator comes in picture there. It converts that static relational table into a bunch of insert streams and then returns back. So then the executor never knows it's an actual stream or just, you know, delta operator doing its magic. The chi operator is the inverse. It basically says, okay, given a stream, convert it into a relation. So what the chi operator needs is a time window. You just say, okay, for the next 1 hour, materialize data, convert them into a view or materialize view and give it to me. That's it. These are a bunch of more streaming operators. People from Apex will actually recognize some of them. It's, you know, replaced, or basically when you do things around a directed acyclic graph, some of these come in really useful. I'll not discuss them much because some of them have some applications and some of them are still in flux. But yeah, there's some more operators that are applicable just for streams. Okay, as I said, the standard SQL optimization rules still apply here. You know, push down filters, push down aggregates, remove redundant sort keys, remove data, remove dead nodes, and all that still happens here. What needs to be additionally done is to optimize delta and chi. One thing to keep in mind is for streams, most of the time that is spent is in materializing and converting it back to a stream. That is delta and chi. So your inputs to delta and chi and the location of delta and chi operators inside your query execution tree are very important. You know, they're as important as scans, right? We all know what happens if we do a bad table scan of a huge table. Right, your entire query performance goes for a toss. The same for delta and chi. They are very expensive operators. They're very expensive operators. They don't do a lot of intelligent things. It's just stream dump, as we call them. So you need to be very careful as to where delta and chi are going. So one heads up here is that if ever your SQL queries on streams are going slow, you should always look at delta and chi and see what inputs they have. How much time are they taking? How much times are they being called? You know, they should be as close to source as possible. They should be as above the source as possible so that they process the minimum number of tuples after as many filters and aggregations applied as possible, right? So you know, you have all those filters, then the scan, filters, aggregations, and then delta, okay. That minimizes the input to these guys. Okay, so problem is delta and chi are not very intuitive to optimizations. So some operations are commutative, as I said, you know. The filter or a predicate, you can basically just move in delta to this guy, and you can, you know, create the delta of R, you just have the inserts, filter that with predicate, and return it back. That is one option. But this case that I mentioned is actually a performance killer, the union case, right? So if you do a delta on top of a join, which is a very, very common operation, it actually converts that into a union. And I actually show you a slide which shows that unions are not very intuitive for these guys. Intuitively, unions are not very performant because for streams, you do something of, you know, you would do a combine and a merge as opposed to a normal distinct that you'd probably do in a normal union. So union is a performance killer, and a delta on a join goes to a union. And delta on a join is a very, very common operation. You know, if you actually just see the customer loads that we get, these are very common operations. And I'll give you a bit of a trivia. So I was doing an experiment with some of these operators on a 5,000 node cluster. And I had a very, very, like 2 terabytes of data, and just ran one of these queries. And the system hung. I think it just ran for like 8 or 9 hours. And that was 70% of execution time was spent on the delta operators happening on top of join. So that converted into a union. Union converted into a merge sort. I'll show you how that happens. And that merge sort was basically taking a lot of time because the data was not actually merged. So the merge sort was not really applicable there, but because it was a union and union forced a merge on the sort key, that, you know, the sort actually just took a lot of time. So you need to be a bit careful about the delta operator. The chi is not that bad, delta is. Okay. Again, some of the other operations that happen around streamings, order buys, okay, they are still applicable, but again, as I said, you can't go back in time. So you need to make sure that the system still can make progress, system can still, you know, monotonicity is applicable. Ideally, this is covered if you have monotonicity. If you have that, you don't need to care about order buys. They'll work fine as is. Unions, as I said. An ideal union in a relational world would be done by distinct, but in our case, for streams, we do, you know, we combine the inputs and then do a merge sort. That's how it's done. Honestly, I don't know why that is done that way, but it's just done. You know, I don't know much history on this part. So the sort, the merge of the sort key is very slow. Imagine a MapReduce. And that guy gets really slow. And if you have that on a large amount of data, you'll probably start losing performance, as I just gave an example, right? So with you, be careful with unions. And if you have to be careful with unions, be careful with deltas, because that delta converts into a union, as I said, right? This example, the delta join. And so it's actually a vicious circle here. When you actually use these things, you'll do a lot of delta on top of joins because you want to output the join results. And that will turn into union, you will turn into a sort, and you probably start losing a lot of things. Last thing I said in this slide is that you should always remember that ensuring the monotonicity of your data is very important. Not just for the semantic correctness of results, but also for your performance. For example, if you don't have the monotonicity, the order by will start materializing data, sorting it, again materializing it over some other data, some other period, sorting it, and then merging it. It turns into an external sort. You know, we all know external sorts, external disk sorts, right? External merge sorts, actually, yeah. Or disk sorts, whatever. So that is super slow. And that is avoided only in the case when you can specify the monotonicity of the data. So how you ideally do that in CalCite is that it's just a constraint on your column. So when you create a table, you just say monotonic, and you say, you give the monotonic condition. So then when the data comes in into the table, CalCite or any streaming engine will basically do the validation check, just like a normal constraint. And if there's a monotonicity break, it'll error out and say, okay, this data can't be inserted. Just like primary key constraints or any other constraints. So continuing on that, is why we care about monotonicity. I think I've given enough context on this specific topic, But again, just summarize, these are why we need them. One missing point here is about the sorts. If you know, your sorts get really fast if you have monotonicity. And luckily, if your monotonic key is your sort key, in that case, it gets really, really fast because it doesn't care about a lot of things or the satellite data and everything. It knows that, okay, this is my monotonic column. This will never be repeated. And this is also my sort column. So to hell with all the auxiliary data, I'll just use this as my primary sort key. In that case, this guy goes really fast. So yeah, this is a lot of content. So basically, the point that comes down, yeah, questions? Right. So to summarize it, basically what I'd like to say here is that if you're planning to do streams on top, SQL on top of your streams, one thing to keep in mind is if it actually makes sense for your system, because what do your stream represent? Why do you need SQL? And does it actually make sense if I say, you know, I'm joining your stream to a SQL table? Does that make sense? If it does, well and good. Other thing is that if you're supporting SQL on top of your streams, then you can actually go out and talk to other SQL engines, right? You can talk to normal relational databases. You can build bridges between yourself. And for example, PostgreSQL has something called Foreign Data Wrappers, which allow you to talk to different engines. So you can write a Foreign Data Wrapper between your system and SQL on Postgres, and you can exchange SQL queries, you know, you can push down aggregates and stuff like that. So then you have a lot of capability on your hands. I think those are the biggest driving factors for SQL on top of streams. But just one word of caution that this is really easy to get wrong. You know, ask the Apex guys. They did a fantastic integration of Calcite and Apex. And I did a talk on Flink and Calcite on Monday. So these things are a bit hard to get right, especially if is a dialect that you support on a system. The language you support is far from SQL. If that's what's happening, then you'll have to find a way to translate some of that, your own language or your own APIs, into SQL. Or you'll have to write your own parser for them. Calcite will help you with that, but again, you'll have to get a bit deep down into parsing as well. So this is a very, you know, this is a decision that you'll have to take carefully. But if you really need it, Calcite is the way to go. And again, as I said, there are many examples out there, SAMHSA, Apex, Flink, which you can actually refer to. And the Calcite community is very helpful. You can reach out to us and talk to us about it. In fact, I'll be doing a couple of discussions today. So feel free to let us know. We'll be glad to help you. And I'll be here all day. Feel free to reach out to me. And in case of any questions, I'll be glad to take them. So, thanks, guys. So, sure, Shanna.
So, in the group by doors,
can you get a mic? Thanks, guys. Yeah. Okay, just speak up. I'll send it. Yeah.
So in a group by clause, basically, you mentioned that that column that it should be monotonic, right?
Right.
But what if it's like, let's say, group by product,
okay,
which may or may not be, or group by category?
Right.
It's a string. It may not be monotonic.
Right. In that
how
case,
do you deal with that?
Exactly. So this is a good one. So as I said, right, you should always map such things back to relational tables. So in the example that you mentioned, the string could not be the same, right? The product could not be the same. I completely agree. But in that case, you'd probably have a grid. You'd have a unique identifier, which would distinguish between two product names, right? So even if the exact same data value was present, the grid would distinguish those two tuples. Or else, I don't think that you use the string as a primary key, right? You never do that. You not use a string as a primary key. In that case, the insertion won't go in. So you have two cases. Either if you actually manage to create some sort of a full text search index on top of your string and then use that as a primary key, in that case, the second insertion won't go in. And that's the same case here. On the other hand, if you have a sort of a numeric primary key and you say that, you know what, this is the one that identifies my tuples. So even if I have the exact same string twice, they're not physically the same. Or they're not logically the same because they have two different identifiers. So in that case, the primary key is still different. You can do the group by, you can do everything.
So are you suggesting that Calcite supports group by on the primary key only?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that Calcite, so for any group by, right, you need to ensure that the two tuples are not the same. And if that the two tuples are present in the data, then you'd have to, you know, you'll have to say that, you have to assume that they were not the same, or else the input basically would not have been done. The insert would have not gone through. It's the same here. I'm not saying the cache supports group bys only on the monotonic column, but you need to have a monotonic column on your data. So that when the inserts happen, at that point, cache can ensure that the monotonicity is not broken. And if the tuple gets into your system, that means it was monotonic, so you can do group by any column. The same for, you know, if your data made it past the primary key constraint in your input or in insert, that means it's safe to be processed, and then you can group by any column you want.
Okay. So as you're saying, the group by will always happen on in a window, right? Basically. So is there a way to make it global?
Global in the sense,
let's say I'm doing a group by on category. Okay. So there's a category A, which is the first row, and then there's a category A, which is appearing in the last row.
Okay.
As a part of the stream.
Okay.
Now, that should get grouped together.
Okay, so that's a different thing, right? Because what you're talking about is a semantic group by. That's true for relational database, right? You can basically say that the group boundaries are defined on the values, right? Okay, there are two category values, and they basically will be grouped together because they are defined with the group boundary is defined by value. So in that case, right, you have the flexibility of sorting your entire data beforehand, right? If you imagine how plain aggregate happens, the sort plus group distincts, right? But we don't have that flexibility here. So we are forced to define those group boundaries by time. So if you did that query here on a stream, those two tuples would be part of two different groups. So for example, your first tuple came at 1:30 p.m., the other one came at 6:30 p.m. So first one will be part of the group at between 1 to 2, the other one will be part of group 6 to 7. Because there's no way I can know that tuple beforehand, right? So the group boundaries are not defined by values, but by time. That's okay. That's a limitation, but you know, unless you materialize, there's no other way.
Yeah, makes sense.
Makes sense?
Yeah. I just have one more question.
Sure.
So there's a operator called as window also,
yes, right?
Right. Can you tell a little bit about that?
So window is basically, the window operator basically what a regular relation window operator does. So window is basically window will take in all the input that you have. It will not touch that input, but it will then aggregate some values at a side tuple store or something. And at fixed intervals, it will output those aggregated values and then reset itself. So it's window aggregates are very intuitive to calcite or into streams, because you basically say that, okay, my window size is 1 hour. And for 1 hour, just let the data come in, aggregate, and then at the end of when the 1 hour completes, you say, okay, my window is complete. You give out those values. So window aggregates, the window operator in calcite exactly the same as a relational operator.
Yeah.
See those values, let those tuples be untouched, just track them, do some aggregation, and at the end of the defined window, output those values and reset your aggregation.
And the window is on at the processing time axis,
yes,
and not event time axis.
No.
Okay.
Processing time. Any other questions? Sure.
You mentioned the joints, but yes, the joints are working. It's what kind of semantic of the joins is? Is just the left join, outer join, or it's equi-join?
These are mostly equi-joins. Outer joins are a bit of a different story, so that's why I did not touch them here. Outer joins are not completely supported right now, because again, it's pretty hard to get them right unless you're materializing. But these are mostly, if you can left join on the, if you're joining a stream and a table, you can join on the side of the table, right? So you can basically say left join in the table with the left side. You can't join, you cannot make the left join on the stream side, because then you're not keeping state. In that case, you'll have to say materialize. In that case, it'll be like,
okay,
you actually materialize in the 1 hour and then joining it. This is a table-to-table join. But if you're doing a pure stream-to-table join, it'll mostly be an equi join.
Because as I understood, if whatever you choose is write on the
right
join, you have to create a snapshot of it.
Exactly.
And this is a problem, how big snapshot you want to keep, because, okay, can impact semantics.
Exactly.
So I thought like using theta join or something, one could basically think about it that join for two streams is like forking the stream into two different ones.
Yes, you could do that, but
you have infinite, if you consider infinite streams, so with this
yes
one you fork. and right. you have a different branch of the stream, or you create the new stream.
Yeah, the problem is then you'll have to manage two streams, right?
Yeah, okay. That's but in some cases you want it for ETL, for example.
Yeah, that's true. So if you want that, it's good, but that's not the generic behavior that people want, that if I'm joining, then there's another new stream that's created. So the easier way is that you just create a snapshot of that stream. If you join two streams, you take the snapshot and then you join them. That's an easier way, but yeah, what you said is completely doable. That's okay. Definitely one thing. That's
I just wanted to say I got it right. Yeah. Thank you.
That's perfectly fine.
Thank you.
Anything else, guys? Okay, thanks a lot for attending the talk, and I'll be around. Feel free to ping me, and then we can definitely discuss. And I'll post these slides on the website, so feel free to let me know. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.